All rise, and welcome to this sports court of public opinion we call Foul Play-by-Play, the show that provides play-by-play commentary on foul play in sports. I'm your host, the Dishonorable Anthony Variano, and I'm joined by my attorney, Michael Hawes, of McLarity & Hawes Law Firm in Glendive, Montana. If you're a Montana listener in need of an attorney, don't hesitate to call Mike at 406-377-2654. Are you ready to talk about this week's cheats, cheap shots, and alleged criminals in sports, Mike?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, let's get to headline number one. This is a big one that took 6 years to get here. The Supreme Court struck down the federal law prohibiting state-sponsored sports betting, so states can now decide whether to allow or disallow sports gambling, with 20 states already having proposed bills to legalize sports gambling. According to an ESPN report by David Purdom, one research firm estimated before the ruling that 32 states would likely offer sports betting within 5 years. Now, I know in Montana there are already people passing bad checks to play gaming machines, so do you think legalized sports gambling will result in more or less litigation in the courts, Mike? And do you expect it will result in more or less work for you personally?
First things first, I would like to, show my enthusiasm as a gambler and as a sports, extreme sports fan. I love this ruling. I hope the states handle it right. It's going to help baseball so much, my favorite sport. But your first question regarding, future opportunity for me as a lawyer, I don't think it's really going to affect anything. I still think the bad checks are going to stick in kind of the realm they're in right now, which is, you're from Montana, so gambling machines and stuff, those are the people's. That's what's, ruining people's lives. I think sports betting has always been here. I like the idea that the states are going to regulate it better so that, it'll just make it safe, a safer practice for something that's already going on. I don't think it's going to make much more litigation in the courts, but that's just my personal take.
So what effect would legal sports gambling in Montana have on how you divvy up your gambling budget?
It would actually probably save me money, sadly, and I think you've been a witness to that with our recent endeavors down in Vegas. Sadly, I've got a slight gambling problem, and those machines do not help me. I like the idea that sports gambling, regardless, personal responsibility is going to have to come into it. But when you bet on a sporting event, you're forced to take time out of your day and actually watch that event.
Right.
So it's not the kind of quick fix you get from slamming that button down on a poker machine.
Right.
So personally, I think it's going to save me money as long as the Twins can win a couple games.
So New Jersey expects to have its bookies up and running before the start of the NBA Finals. Well, hopes to, actually. But tribal casinos could theoretically open sports books immediately because they're their own sovereign nations. The 93 Nation State Gaming Compact authorizes the Oneida Nation of New York to adopt any gaming specification that is permitted without any further approvals by the state, and they intend to do so as soon as possible. Tribal casinos in rural America have the most to gain from the Supreme Court's decision because sports gambling could actually cut into the profits of urban tribal casinos by moving money from, like you say, those most profitable gaming machines to less profitable sports books. Also, setting up a sports book is prohibitively expensive, and especially an online sports book, which most gamblers will demand in this marketplace. So the cautious approach of urban tribal casinos to open sports books could allow rural tribal casinos to be the first to market in American online sports book industry. Do you foresee a fight between some states and tribal casinos to keep sports gambling illegal? And what would that fight look like given the sovereignty of tribal nations and them operating under their own court system and laws?
Yeah, I think there will be a fight between the states and these sovereign nations, and I will call them sovereign nations. Legally, they've been losing this identity as a sovereign nation over the years, which I don't believe is right.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I think there will be some legal battles to be fought. I think Native Americans will be the first ones, on the front lines of this new gambling world we're going to live in. And I think they should be. I guess this isn't related to the question. I'm surprised, I guess, with this ruling that it took this long. I really thought, Vegas, you know, would have forced this kind of litigation or some kind of a ruling through quicker so that Vegas could, like they do everything else, you know, control America's gambling pulse, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm surprised that Vegas didn't win this one out and is going to let, I guess, non-Vegas casinos take in some of the proceeds and the profits of what's going to come from this.
Well, it's been 26 years, almost 26 years, that they've had a monopoly on this industry. And looks like last year they... well, at least $4.8 billion was wagered at Nevada sportsbooks. That's just sportsbooks. It doesn't include any other gaming.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's. I really thought they would have a stranglehold over all of this sports betting. And I think it'll be nice to see the tribes get some of this money, then as well as the states as well. And really with the Supreme Court ruling, it's really not... We're going to have to wait and see how the states implement it. I mean, this isn't a issue that was resolved throughout this or with this ruling. Each
right.
state's going to play it out, and we're going to keep readdressing this issue for the years to come.
Experts seem to believe that the amount of money spent on sports gambling, which is estimated at a roughly $150 billion, I think, is overestimated. But there are tons of money to be made by scores of entities outside the gaming industry. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says he wants 1% of all bets made to regulate the gambling on his sport and to make sure that players aren't betting on games and the like. Local newspapers and radio entities in states with legal sports gambling will now be able to provide content related to sports gambling instead of dancing around it. Most importantly, though, most of the billions of dollars Americans have stashed with online bookkeepers overseas will find its way back to the states and stimulate the American economy. So will legal sports gambling be a net benefit or net detriment to the nation, given the addictiveness of gambling and potential tax revenue and job creation that could result?
I mean, I would have to weigh in the side of that. I think it'll be a net benefit. And I think with, I mean, what you're saying there, people are already doing it. If you remember back, whether or not you consider playing cards a sport, but if you remember back then when all the money was going off to, you know, the Cayman Islands or whatever because we refused to regulate this,
yeah.
I mean, there's clearly a need, as we've shown as a society, for this form of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think, just stupid in this age of technology for us to sit back and think that the result's going to come anyway. Europe, everywhere else is doing this. America's losing tax revenue from this. So I think it's going to be a net benefit, mainly because it's already going on anyway.
All right. Well, let's
does
get
that
to
make
our,
sense?
Yeah, it does. Let's get to our next headline, which is, of course, domestic violence and how the sporting leagues want to adjudicate these matters when the courts can't even do it. So newly hired coach of the Detroit Lions, Matt Patricia, was forced to once again express his innocence when Robert Snell of the Detroit News published a story about sexual assault allegations brought against him that resulted in an indictment but no trial for Patricia 22 years ago. Patricia's accuser declined to testify, citing stress as a reason, but Patricia and his attorney vehemently denied the abuse ever occurring. Similar situation in breaking news, Reuben Foster, who was alleged to have committed domestic violence, his ex-girlfriend who brought the allegations, Alyssa Ennis, testified before a jury that she lied about the abuse allegations and was actually injured in a fit of road rage, a fight that occurred because of her and another person's driving on the freeway. So, first of all, Mike, can you explain to our listeners what makes these types of charges so difficult to adjudicate and why so many of them never go to trial?
Yeah, as you told the listeners, I mean, that is my employment as a defense attorney, and I defend numerous people charged with all forms of sexual assault. Why these types of charges are so difficult to adjudicate is because... God, it's a tough question to ask as our answer as a defense attorney, because I think they're they're difficult to prove when we're looking at like the hard physical evidence. I think a lot of people watch CSI and all that garbage, and you know, they think, you know, you got to have all this physical evidence. So right. I mean, most rape cases or sexual assault cases, there's not going to be that physical evidence to look back on and rely on. So what you're left with is just an accuser's statements. So you're talking about a victim or an alleged victim, their story mm-hmm. of what happened. And sadly, a lot of victims are, I'm going to say alleged victims, because sometimes this stuff is false, mm-hmm. but I'm also not going to deny the fact that most, you know, sexual assaults don't get reported. A lot of those women, and I'll say women because this predominantly happens to women, going through trial and having to sit up there and be barraged by defense attorneys like myself isn't the most fun process, I guess. And also, I mean, these are coming from personal relationships often. I mean, people have been together a long time where, I mean, a statement you make to police one night, you know, when you're totally pissed off at your partner and you think things are done, that sentiment might change if you guys get back together. And I mean, we're human beings. I mean,
right.
And these are allegations coming out of very heated moments. So I don't want to downplay what the victims or alleged victims are saying, but I also think we need to understand where a lot of these statements are coming from. And it's, I mean, everybody gets their day in court. That's what I tell my clients, and I truly believe in. I mean, it's one thing to throw an allegation at somebody. I mean, the person that allegation is being thrown at has his constitutional right to defend himself. So, I mean, you've got the right to cross-examine your accuser. And that's essentially why these things don't come to court, because the state, and when I say the state, the prosecutor, often loses a victim. And that can be because a victim changes her mind about making a statement in court. Possibly they work it out civilly. I mean, when we're talking about athletes and people with money, sometimes that's how justice is served, is by paying somebody off. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but that's how a lot of these things get resolved.
We'll go to break here and come back with the next headline.